The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decision.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth.
Hey, welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. I'm John Walker, Regional Vice President at Mercer Advisors. Thrilled to be back with you again this week. We're going to dive into a topic that we talk about a lot, right? I mean, the whole program here is talking about how your life and wealth intersect. The world that surrounds you informs the way that you think about money. But one of the things we've spent a lot of time over the years discussing is really what happens as you transition to retirement? What should you be thinking about? And how people really struggle to live their best life sometimes in retirement if they haven't done the proper planning or if they don't have someone to guide them along. And so I'm thrilled to welcome in a really special guest this week who wrote a really incredible book called Keys to a Successful Retirement. So let me welcome in the author of said book, Mr. Fritz Gilbert. Fritz, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Hey, thanks, John. I love your mission and we're perfectly aligned on trying to help people achieve a great retirement. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll say beyond just your book, you write a ton of great articles and blog posts. And the one that caught my eye the other day, you wrote a really great article recently. It's around how retirement is like a game of poker. And you talk about how you get dealt a hand. But the neat thing about retirement, unlike the actual game of poker, is that you can keep picking up cards and dropping cards and trying to make your best hand, right? Did I get the analogy right?
Yeah, and it's funny, John, you mentioned that. That was probably 6 to 9 months ago in my blog, The Retirement Manifesto, and I wrote it on there. And I've used that analogy so many times. I just used it yesterday with a guy who was talking about he wants to do a little bit, a little less of this, a little more of that. And I'm like, yeah, you're just shuffling your cards, you know? And it really works. I like telling metaphors and stories that you can draw the parallels to retirement. And that one for me has really resonated because it's what I'm doing in my own retirement, right? I thought I'll be fly fishing a lot. I live in the mountains. There's a lot of trout streams. And I did for the first year, but after about a year and I've kind of fished the same sections of the river, you know, numerous times and I wasn't getting the same thrill out of it. So guess what? I put that card down. I'm mountain biking more, right? It is a good analogy and we're free to make those choices for the first time in our lives.
Yeah. And you talk about how there's no limit on how many cards you can draw, right? If you've done the right planning. And I think as a planning firm, right, we talk a lot to folks about how preparation and planning is critical in this because you talk about in your book, right, freedom. In many cases, it's people's first taste of freedom. And I can say, drawing on my experience from maybe let's go back to college and say when some people got their first taste of freedom, Fritz, they didn't really handle it maybe the best way, right?
Yeah.
It was when you take the guardrails off, sometimes it can lead to poor choices. So there is that push and pull between I love this newfound freedom I have in retirement because I'm not the slave to the traffic light, as they say, right? I'm not stuck commuting every day. I don't have to be behind my desk 8 hours a day. I have freedom of choice, but then there's a struggle between now, what do I do, right? What do I do and what am I allowed to do? What can I afford to do? How can I take advantage of this? That's really kind of the really push and pull we often see in helping families.
Yeah. And I look at it this way, you know, the freedom obviously is the allure. When you're thinking about retirement, you see the positives of the freedom, but a lot of people after they maybe are about a year into the retirement, the first year is a honeymoon, everybody enjoys it for the most part, but a surprisingly high number of retirees get into a phase about a year in where that freedom can sometimes the dark side of that can start showing up. And yeah, the freedom is great. The downside of it is you're responsible to find purposeful things to do that fill that time. And when you're a pre-retiree, you don't necessarily appreciate the significance of that statement, right? It's up to you to find what you're going to do with that time. And if you don't do it well, you will, I don't know if you know Mike Drack, he's a friend of mine. He wrote a book, Retirement Hell, Retirement Hell or Heaven. And he went through a retirement hell where he went through a very tough transition, which we just did a survey on my blog with another guy, Eric Weigel, and 70% of the retirees said that they had some difficulty with the transition. It's not as smooth as you think it's going to be. And surprisingly, it's typically not around the financial areas. It's around what are you going to do with that time freedom that gives you a sense of purpose, sense of identity, all those non-financial things that you used to get from work. You've got to find a way to get those in your life using that freedom in a purposeful way. And that's the challenge of a good retirement.
Yeah. And so Fritz, you know, one of the things, I don't want to be dismissive of the fact, right? You're right. We talk a lot on this program and with the families that we work around purpose and finding purpose in retirement, because you're right. It kind of falls away if you have built an identity around your career, or if it's at least absorbed a lot of your time and who you are, it has often filled that void of purpose. Now, we can separate that. There are certainly families that are struggling to plan for retirement, and we probably are on the precipice of a retirement planning crisis of sorts here in our country, because people are spending a lot less time on strategizing and preparing for retirement than maybe they should be, or have the inability to save what they might need to. There's all kinds of defined benefit plans, and pensions have sort of gone the way of the dodo. Some of the securities that were in place for certain generations don't exist. But if you have prepared, and if you have worked with a team maybe to help you get there, that transition to what a meaningful retirement looks like can be really, really challenging, as you said, particularly after the honeymoon phase is over. We find it too in the dynamics of relationships, right? Because you have lost maybe sometimes connectivity, right? Your social fabric might have been built around your career too. And so it really is often challenging for folks to retire to know what to do next. But you talk about that a lot in your manifesto around what you did to help navigate that, right? Can you share with our audience some of what you've learned through that?
Yeah, and let me touch on the financials first, because you're absolutely right to bring that up. I think, you know, I didn't want to understate the financial importance. I think the point of focusing on the non-financials is everybody thinks about the financials, right? It's an intuitive, natural question. Do I have, you know, you're going to give up your paycheck. Gee, do I have enough money to retire? Am I going to die before my money runs out, right? That's everybody's concern. So
it's essentially, we talk about it all the time. That's our like number one goal, right? The question we have to always solve for is, am I going to run out of money, right? And that's the math part, right? That's
exactly
the math of what we do. But there's nuance on the human side.
Right. And the reason I think I like to really stress the non-financial is I would argue the financial is absolutely necessary, but it's not sufficient. And too many people stop with the financials and they don't take time to think about these non-financial areas. So my whole focus is to encourage people. Ideally, you know, typically you'll get your numbers kind of worked out. If you're responsible, you're working with a planner, you know, you're a good DIY, whatever, you're going to know your numbers probably, let's say, a year before you retire if you're really a planner. So my message is, hey, take that last year. Once you kind of know your numbers are in place, yeah, you can sit there and analyze them to death and run more calculators and do this and do that. Instead of doing that, let's say you've got pretty good confidence in the numbers at this point. Well, then take that same amount of energy and focus it in these non-financial areas and think about what you want to do. And in my case, and this I write about this in my book and on my blog, you know, I was, I guess, lucky, but I was also a planner. I started my blog 3 years before I retired. That is, to me, an example of the types of things other people can do. I had a little bit of an interest in it. I listened to podcasts a lot, and I was like, you know, I think I'd enjoy writing, but I didn't really, you know, I'd been in corporate America for 30 years, done, you know, 10,000 emails and everything else, but I'd never really written for the joy of writing. So I was like, I'm just going to start this blog. I've got 3 years to go. If it turns into something, hey, maybe that's something I can do in retirement. So I was starting to explore hobbies and interests that I could start developing pre-retirement that could bridge over into those retirement years. And fortunately for me, writing was one that I discovered. I love it. And off I go. And it's become a purpose in my retirement. So I really encourage people to think of starting to build those things that will have a lifespan that goes beyond your working years, and do that a couple of years before you retire is what I found to be the most successful in my life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I couldn't agree more, Fritz. I think there's sort of this, when I retire, I'm going to finally get to do the things I always wanted to do. But then you find that maybe, as you said earlier with fly fishing, like, hey, I love to fish, but you thought that you'd spend your idle time doing a lot of fishing. It turns out you did for a little bit. Now you found other passions to follow. But people really struggle sometimes, Fritz, to remember, identify, figure out, to explore their curiosities, as you say, to figure out what those passions really are. And often we see also struggle with that dynamic of, I really thought this is what I like to do. And now that I'm doing it all the time, I don't really quite like it as much, or exactly. It doesn't really fill the void or give me purpose.
Exactly. And I think it's hard to overgeneralize, or it's easy to overgeneralize in this topic, I guess. But one of the things that I've tended to see with a lot of my readers and people I've interacted with, a lot of those things that you think you're going to love doing are great when you're doing it on a vacation or an extended weekend. But when you do it for your life, thinking about travel, travel sounds great. If you travel all the time, well, I've had friends that have become full-time RVers. They travel around, and after a while, they're like, you know, I kind of miss that sense of community I had in that town I used to live in, right? I had a bunch of friends. We'd go out and do stuff. I don't have that anymore. And yeah, travel's fine, but man, I've been doing it for a year. I've kind of been to most of the national parks I wanted to see. You know, what am I going to do next? So I think as a general direction to people, if you're starting to think about something that interests you, look beyond just those things that are kind of weekend activities that you enjoy. Fly fishing was my example, travel. And the place to start looking is areas where you can find a way to meet a need in your community to help other people. Finding those types of areas and getting that sense of fulfillment of giving back in your life are much more rewarding longer term than the self-centered activities that you think you're going to enjoy forever. There's just something about it. And that's why I think so many retirees are drawn into charitable activities. It's rewarding and you've got the time to do it. And you've tried a couple selfish focused things. There's nothing wrong with selfish focused things, but include in your mix, include in your poker hand, if you will, a few cards that focus on, you know, hey, maybe Habitat for Humanity, go build a house, just see what you think. You kind of have an interest, go on a build, you know, see what you think about it. Just explore a few of those things. And if you're fortunate, you'll find a few things that really bring a sense of purpose and reward in your life beyond the financial side.
I couldn't agree more, Fritz. And we're here with Fritz Gilbert, author of The Retirement Manifesto, Keys to a Successful Retirement. And Fritz, I think that's right. We talk a lot about that connectivity, that connection, and finding purpose and meaning. And there's a lot of science, and we've had some folks on to discuss this in the past, of there's actual research and data that says that giving, that finding purpose through giving, actually brings you more joy than you could possibly imagine. And so you get the double win, right? You're giving back to the community, you're doing something meaningful, but it actually is probably doing more for you than you realize. Yeah. And so that's a really critical point, right? If you've solved the math part, you've gotten to a place where you're comfortable that the numbers are going to work for you, then it really is identifying, now what? Now what? And I love your point around finding an activity that's not just something you did casually for your own enjoyment, but actually maybe brings fulfillment, because that's what we find on the emotional side is really lacking when people get into their retirement years. It doesn't always work out the way they wanted. And the other thing you talk about a lot is that sometimes, if going back to our card game analogy, just like poker, sometimes you get dealt a hand that you didn't quite expect and you're not always prepared to deal with it, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just a reality, right? Look at the bear market the last, you know, 18 months. I mean, you know, you could have a spouse that suddenly becomes ill. There are inevitably things that you cannot plan for. And some of those are going to happen, right? So the other big important area where I guess this leads to is I put it around mindset. And I write about this a lot in my book. And I actually wrote about a month before I retired, I wrote a post called The 10 Commandments of Retirement. And these were kind of my guidelines for how I wanted to go into retirement, what I wanted to be thinking about. And number one was have an attitude of gratitude. You know, one was never stop learning. But a lot of them, as you read through those, were focused on your internal mindset and the way you look at things. And having a positive attitude, not just Pollyanna, you know, unrealistic, but you can always choose to look at the positive or the negative. It's a choice. And if you choose to focus on the negative and all you do is pay attention to the news and you're getting depressed over pick the social issue of the day, it's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If all you think about is negative stuff and you just let yourself dwell on that, or do you focus on the positive and you try to find the good and you try to focus on the good? That's one thing. The other thing is I always talk about, and this, I didn't invent it, but kind of a smaller circle inside of a larger circle. And the small circle are the things you can control. The larger circle is all the things you can worry about, but you can't control. Don't focus on things in that big circle. focus on things in the little circle, things you can control, and don't waste all that emotional energy getting upset about things that you can't control anyway. You know, beyond that, what are you going to do? There's things that happen, but you can at least choose to try to view things as positively as you can.
I think that's a great point, Fritz. We talk a lot about, and we use here as a part of our planning, something called our Life Builder tool, right? Which shows you, even within the planning process, the things that you can kind of control, right? You have some control around your budget. You have some control around your savings. You have some control around your income potentially, right? But there's a lot in the financial world that you really don't have control over that a lot of people agonize about, right? You can influence it maybe based on choices, but you can't really control the markets. You can make decisions based on what you know and what you're trying to accomplish, but it is what it is, right? There's taxes, inflation, all these things you don't have direct control over them, but people do agonize over them.
Yeah.
We jokingly, glibly say to folks like, hey, if you can tell us exactly when you're going to die, we can get the math right. We can get it to the penny.
Right?
We can do it perfectly. It's easy if I know the end point. But without that variable, right, you're worrying about things that are so far out of the scope of your control. But it applies beyond your money, too. You're right. It applies to the way people view the world. And so you have options. Sometimes the option is turn off the news. Go take a hike, right? Go get some
Move out of the city, right? If you don't like all the crime, move out of the city. And I guess instead of worrying about it, and this applies to both the financial and non-financials, take that energy and focus on, okay, what can I do? What's in the small circle? And you talk about the financial stuff. Okay, I'm worried about sequence of return risk, right? A bear market after I retire. Well, okay, how much cash buffer do you think is right based on your risk personality, your profile, your concerns? Well, maybe you need to build a little bit more cash. That's a tactical item you can do that will affect your peace of mind about that potential risk. Inflation. Okay, what do you have in your portfolio that has the potential and has been proven over time? Past results never indicate the future. Got to put in the disclaimer, blah, blah, blah. But what's in your asset allocation that should give you the ability to have your assets grow at a pace that over time outgrows inflation? That's where you focus, right? Building those defenses. I don't like all the crime in my area. Well, have you considered moving, right? You can move. It's within your control. Think about it. Is there an area you'd rather live? All those types of things are much more productive to focus your energy on than just sitting there stressed about, man, have you seen what the price of milk? Look at eggs, man, eggs are crazy, right? Okay, yeah, you can talk about that all day long, but you're not doing anything about it, right?
Right.
Focus on the small circle stuff you can do.
Absolutely. It's completely right. My father used to always say, you always have a choice, John. You may not like the options, but there is always a choice. And it's a life lesson, right? That is really critically important, right? You do have to change your mindset to say, what are my actual controllable options here? I mean, I'm a parent. I talk about this with my kids all the time, right? It's like, hey, let's just control what we can control. You can't worry about things that haven't happened yet or that may never happen at all. And if you waste your energy on that, you don't have enough energy left for all the things that you can do, right? So it's that mindset shift of how do I get away from the things that I'm agonizing about? And often we see, and I wonder if you've shared the same observations or if your data bears this out, it's more of a casual observation, but the folks who feel like they don't have maybe purpose in other things seem to agonize about these things more, right? Maybe that's circumstantial. I'll tell you, I can hear from your voice, right? You're worried about your next article that you're going to write and who's going to take the dogs for a walk. And maybe you will get some fly fishing in, but I don't think you're necessarily worried about your current asset allocation based on inflation because you've got a plan and you're comfortable with it and you have found purpose outside of that.
Exactly. And I'll tell you something else that we did well. And I actually wrote an article, I called it the 90-10 rule of retirement. And what that refers to is as you're getting ready to retire, obviously you're very focused on the numbers because you know once you make that decision, there's realistically not good opportunity to go back. You'll never make the kind of money you're making when you quit, right? So you're really focused on the financials. But after you retire, you find that's the 90-10. Post-retirement, and in my case, to your point, we don't think about money almost never. I do a once a year deep dive financial review of our portfolio and our safe withdrawal rate and how much can we spend for the following year, blah, blah, blah. I do kind of quarterly asset allocation reviews. And if I need to make some adjustments, fine. It was something like 5 hours a year that we spend on our financials. So it's very small. But part of the reason, and this is where I wanted to go with this, again, focus on what you can control. as you're doing your retirement planning and you're putting together your spending projection, number one, spending really matters. Don't just wing it. You've got, as you guys know, you've got to put some effort into really getting a realistic spending estimate and then pad it, you know, build in a little bit of a buffer. We had to buy private health insurance. I retired at age 55. We forecasted $2,500 a month. Huge number, right? But at the time, that was kind of the high end of the range of what private insurance would pay. So let's use the high end of the range. And we're actually in now at about 2,000. You know, we don't qualify for the ACA subsidies. Okay, you know, first world problem, I guess. At the end of the day, it's math. And if you can buffer the math with some conservative planning, plan a little bit more travel than you really think you're going to do. Build in some discretionary spending as a buffer above and beyond your basic needs. Because then if you do get into a really bad market environment, high inflation and everything else, you know you've got some cushion built into your numbers and it helps you worry about it less when you get into retirement like I am now. So I think that conservative planning on the front end is part of why we don't worry about it as much. Again, it's one of those things you can control. So it helps to have a little bit of cushion. Now, it might mean you have to work longer. That's a downside, right? Let's be realistic. There's an opportunity cost potentially. You don't want to hedge too much, because then you'll never be able to retire. So everything's got a balance.
Yeah, and I think that's where if you don't know how to calculate that, Fritz, on your own, right, working with a team can be really helpful to sort of guide you through that transition. We often also find, and I use this analogy all the time, and you may have heard it, right? There's the more people, unfortunately, die after they've already reached the summit when they've scaled Mount Everest than they do going up the mountain, right? It's coming down that's often more treacherous. And so you said it earlier, right? When you're still working, you have income, it's reliable, you have a job, you can afford maybe a mistake or a slip up here or there because you're still on the way up. But once you've reached that precipice and started the way down, you've got to be much more purposeful and calculating maybe than you were when you were working with not only your spending, but your investment strategy, your cash flow strategy, maybe tighter on your budget, right? Things that you really need to be a little more cognizant of, and maybe having some partnership there could be helpful. But it's two separate sides of the same coin. There's the money. And then who's going to help you through this challenging time? So before I let you go today, Fritz, how do you navigate this needing of purpose, the really hitting your 10 commandments? It could be hard on your own. What advice would you have for our listeners if they're struggling with this?
Yeah. And I would say most people do struggle with it, John. Even if you don't think about it in the pre-retirement planning phase, you will think about it once you retire, right? There's no avoiding it because you're going to be sitting around, you're a year into retirement, and you're starting to get that feeling. And it's hard to explain, but I say in my book, you know, the ideal time to read this is about a year after you've retired. If you're still planning for retirement, great, read the book. There's a lot of good stuff. But put a note on your calendar and read it again about a year from now, because that's when you start feeling it. And unlike the financial side, financial stuff is just put it in a model, run it through a spreadsheet, right? It's math. It's step A, B, C, and D. What's your spending? What's your safe withdrawal rate? You do the math and you come out with an answer. Yes, you can or no, you can't. The non-financial stuff is not like that. If you kind of think about the left side, right side of the brain, you know, I think I'll get them backwards, but the left side, let's say, is analytical. The right side is the artistic. This is kind of the right side stuff. And most of us haven't really had a lot of exercise in the artistic side of the brain, right? Through our careers, we had to present stuff. We had to make deliverables. It was action-oriented, quantifiable, left side analytical stuff for the most part. And it takes some time to exercise that muscle on the other side of the brain. So be patient, recognize that it's going to be a transition. And pretty much everybody that I've talked to that has worked their way through this retirement hell and figured their way into heaven, it kind of comes down to the same general path. And there's variations with everybody's story, but in general, you're going to start feeling it. You're going to know that something's missing, and you're going to say, oh, I remember when Fritz and John had that discussion. Man, this is what they were talking about, right? That will happen for probably 80, 90% of retirees. And what I encourage people to do, preferably before you get to that point, but absolutely as a way to get out of that point, is to just really cultivate your curiosity. Like when you were in kindergarten, right? Really early childhood. And you would just go out and do stuff and explore and play in the woods and play in the sandbox and build stuff. And your whole life was just exploration because you didn't know anything and you were free to do it. Well, guess what? For the first time since you were 4 or 5 years old, you're back in that sandbox and you're free to do anything. And the analogy I use in my book is you're in a white room with white walls and there's nothing on the walls, but you got a box of crayons and you can draw anything you want to draw, right? I'm trying to force people to think artistically. And what it comes down to is, anything that you're a little bit interested in, take a step, just one step. Me with my blog. I think I'll start a blog. My wife was gone one weekend. I opened up Bluehost and I said, okay, I'm going to figure out how to do a blog. That was my first step, right? 7 years later, it's 13,000 readers. It's a huge purpose in my life. I'm on the show with you. It's led to all these places I never saw coming. But it all went back to that first step when I had a little bit of an interest. So ideally, you have about 5, maybe 10 of these things that you're just a little bit curious in, and you pick up that card. You take that first step. My wife, she started a nonprofit. She saw a need. We had dogs on chains in the area. It was driving her crazy. You know what? I think I can do something about that. She took the first step. She started a nonprofit. She figured out how to do it. We got volunteers. We're building fences now for low-income families with dogs on chains. It's huge. It's rewarding. It's a bunch of people involved. We call it the Fido family, Freedom for Fido. Check it out. But it all comes back to that same thing. Take a step in a direction that you're kind of interested in, and you'll throw 10 of them against the wall and 9 of them will slide to the floor. That's fine. If you find one, ideally two, from that exercise, you're on your way. And that's how you work your way through it. So I wish it was more quantifiable than that, but it's very subjective and very artistic.
No, but that's tremendous advice, Fritz. And I think the other thing I heard you say without saying is be kind to yourself, right? You're not the only one who's struggling with this. It's okay. It's okay that this might be difficult, but the advice you gave is brilliant, right? You get to do things maybe you never did before that you've always wanted to. Find a few that work, that connect, that give you purpose, and you'll get your way through this. And if you can't get it on your own, there are resources that are there to help you. And one we totally recommend is you should check out Fritz's book, Keys to a Successful Retirement: Staying Happy, Active, and Productive in Your Retired Years. It's a great read. You can get it everywhere, Amazon, et cetera. I think it's a number one seller on Amazon, or at least it was, Fritz. So congrats on that. And we're thrilled that you were able to join us today. Mr. Fritz Gilbert, the Retirement Manifesto author. Thanks so much for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth show.
Thanks for having me, John. I really appreciate it being on the show.
Transitioning to retirement, finding purpose, finding meaning as you maybe step away from your career and re-explore all these new things and relationships in your life and reconnect with your children and reconnect with your spouse and figure out what your social fabric is going to be now that work isn't in the picture. It can be really, really challenging. And there's the finances of it, of replacing your income. There's knowing that you're going to be okay financially and all of those things that tie into it too. But know that if you're struggling with this, know that if you know people that are struggling with this, you're not alone and that there are resources to help. You could definitely check out Fritz Gilbert's blog, The Retirement Manifesto. You got programs like us, and you've got our Mercer Advisors team and our unified financial planning approach that can really, really help connect the dots for you between your life and your wealth. If you have questions, if you want to talk, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call anytime at 855-558-3500. That's 855-558-3500. Or email us at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com. We're always here to help, and we love hearing from our listeners. I'm John Walker, Regional Vice President at Mercer Advisors. Thanks so much for listening to the Your Life, Your Wealth podcast. Have a great week.
If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discussed to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com.